One of the strategies used by the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS or ISIL, to raise money and intimidate governments is abductions, kidnappings, and demands for ransom. Over the last year, while four American hostages were left in ISIS prisons in secret locations, at least 15 of their fellow inmates were released, only after their home governments, families, and employers negotiated with their captors and paid a lot of money for their return. All but one of those captives that were freed were from Europe, where government officials are willing to pay millions to ensure their citizens' release. Meanwhile, Americans like journalists James Foley and Stephen Sotloff and aid worker Peter Kasich were executed horrifically and publicly. Now, one of the key differences here is that U.S. government policy forbids paying ransom for hostages. But there's a broader policy, this one less clear, about not negotiating at all with terrorists. And this, many critics say, has led to a kind of paralysis where if no daring military rescue is possible, U.S. officials are unable or maybe even unwilling to deal with terrorist hostage situations. Joining us is Rukmini Callimachi, foreign correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Rukmini, hello.
Hello, Todd. Nice to be here.
Now, you write about several former captives from countries like Turkey, Syria, other places who saw Americans in ISIS prisons and then tried to get to American officials to try to help to get those Americans released. What happened?
What seems to have happened is that these eyewitnesses to the kidnappings reached out to American officials and were either rebuffed. I spoke at length with a young man called Yosef Abubakar, who was the fixer or translator for hostage Stephen Sotloff, and he was never interviewed by any American officials. That's one side of the spectrum. The other side is people like Luwai Abu Aljoud, who did get in touch with U.S. officials, but who ended up being channeled to people who had nothing to do with the hostage crisis. In his case, he was interviewed by two State Department officials, an employee and a contractor, and those people were charged with looking into efforts to strengthen civil society groups in Syria. So when he tried to talk about the hostages, they were not interested in listening to him. And as far as I could tell, the information that he passed on was never moved up the chain.
So the U.S. policy precluding paying ransom for hostages is fairly easy to understand. U.S. officials, government officials think if you do that, it just encourages more kidnapping because there's money at stake and it proves you can get money for it. But negotiation or talking to terrorist groups seems to be kind of a gray area. And you have several instances where even if no ransom is on the table, it seems like U.S. officials thought that they couldn't even negotiate or talk or just didn't want to.
Exactly. And so the U.S. policy is a policy of no concessions. It means that when a terrorist group grabs one of our citizens, the U.S. government will not reward that bad behavior by making a substantive concession like a ransom or some other concession. It does not mean that it is illegal for our government officials to negotiate with the enemy. And yet that's how it's been interpreted. And we are hearing now from the families of the executed hostages that they spent months and months listening to the FBI and the State Department telling them that they were doing everything they could to help their loved ones. And in every case, I believe that they believed them. And so they sat on their hands and didn't do anything until this August when the most horrific thing happened, which was the start of the beheadings. And after James Foley's death, the families realized that there was a lot more that could have been done, and they themselves were thrust into the role of being negotiators with these very unsavory characters that act as the go-betweens to ISIS.
But Rukmini Callimachi, I wonder about the U.S. officials themselves. You say the policy is no concessions, but that is kind of a jump from the apparent apathy that a lot of families say they got from U.S. officials. Is it that U.S. civilian officials, let's say, at the State Department have sort of been ground down to believe that if Black Hawk helicopters aren't going to land and SEALs aren't going to jump out to rescue somebody, that really there's really nothing they can do, so they sort of just do nothing?
What seems to have happened is we went from a place in the 1990s when the FBI routinely accompanied families into the field and directly negotiated with the enemy and in many cases helped families deliver privately funded ransoms. to what happened after 9/11, where, first of all, the FBI was shafted to the side, and the focus went to the Pentagon and to the State Department, and those entities preferred a military solution. And that's problematic today for the following reason. Even 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, the majority of American hostages who were being grabbed in places in Afghanistan and in Iraq, both of them countries where U.S. troops had an active presence and had an active intelligence gathering network. Now, hostages are being taken in places like Syria, where our intelligence gathering capability is hampered and where we do not have troops on the ground. So the chances of a success of a military raid are much less, I think, in that theater than they were previously. Yet, our policy hasn't caught up with that. And what seems to be happening is that we have one solution only for getting our hostages out, and that solution is a military one.
So what are the experts telling you about what should be done? It's hard to imagine that the no ransom policy is going to change. But what options does that leave the United States government to deal with enemy terrorists who we don't want to incent to grab our citizens?
I think you're right that the no ransom policy will not change, and that's probably a good thing. I think there is substantive evidence to suggest that paying ransoms is going to create a bigger problem. However, there's a significant gap between paying a ransom, a government-paid ransom, and a military raid. What former FBI officials told me is that routinely in the 1990s and early 2000s, one of the other strategies that was used was using a third country to act as the go-between. That actually happened earlier this year when Theo Patnos, the author and journalist, he was kidnapped by Al-Qaeda's branch in Syria, held for almost 2 years, and he was released. And as far as I can tell, he really was released without a ransom after Qatar got involved. But Qatar got involved not because of a U.S. effort to involve Qatar, but because his family reached out to the relevant officials, and colleagues of his and friends of his traveled to Qatar and essentially made that happen. So it was, again, a civilian effort rather than a government one. And then the other option is allowing families to pay a privately fundraised ransom. That is still controversial because you are still giving money to the terror group. But I think it would be quite hard for officials to look Mrs. Diane Foley in the eye and say to her, you know, that she was wrong in trying to pursue a privately fundraised ransom to save her son in light of what eventually happened.
Rukmini Callimachi, foreign correspondent for our partner in the New York Times. Rukmini has been reporting on American families trying to get their hostage loved ones released at the hands of ISIS or ISIL in Iraq and Syria, and meeting with resistance, apathy, or sometimes paralysis from U.S. officials. Rukmini, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.